Well, I've got to tell you, Maestro, you scooped me on that Hanson. I had no idea that he wrote more than symphonies one or two.
That's right. He's written some really beautiful things that unfortunately don't get played enough. But this is another treasure, and you know I'm a big fan of Hanson. This number five, Symphonia Sacra, is really a very, very special piece of music.
Yeah, I did give it a listen. That was the first time I've heard it.
What was your impression, George, first off?
You know, it's that neo-romantic sound. It kind of reminds you of the Barber Essays for Orchestra, sort of coming from the same place. And
right.
One thing that occurred to me, it built up to a climax about two-thirds of the way through the piece, and it sort of took on a movie music style for me. Did
okay.
Hanson ever write any movie scores?
No, but he should have, because I'll tell you, a lot of people borrow from him, and primarily there are moments of Howard Hanson's music in John Williams' film scores.
And that came to my mind while I was listening. I heard a lick and said that could have been in Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly right. You can hear it in E.T. specifically, I think from Symphony No. 2. There's some real references, because he's a great, great composer. The other thing is, you know, he was the head of the Eastman School of Music. He was producing under the Eastman Rochester Orchestra, which was a special orchestra put together just for him, to do recordings of new works. So people like Barber and Koussevitzky and anybody who wanted things recorded at that time, were putting it on his label and sending it to him. He was then recording it and performing it with that orchestra, which is very experimental at the time. It's unfortunate that in today you would think we'd be a little more progressive and way ahead of that, but I think in those days when he was recording all these works for the first time, he was really a pioneer of this whole thing, getting new works out there. It's a shame that we're not doing that still. You know, we find new works on programs once in a while, but nobody's really out there recording them to try to get them into the mainstream repertoire as much as Howard Hanson was. So therefore, because he was hearing all these new compositions, like you said, it referenced for you some film scores, it's possible he was hearing things. It's also, you heard Barber, you said. I'm sure he was familiar with what Barber was writing and was recording them and performing them himself. Therefore, you know, when you experience something, whether it's conscious or just in your memory, it creeps into your own style a bit. And I think that's what you're hearing.
So how about the Handel Symphonia Sacra? Tell us about that.
The Hanson Symphonia Sacra, this to me is an amazing piece of music. It's in three forms, if you really analyze the whole thing. And it's supposed to be from Scripture. I think it's of John. I hate to be wrong on this thing. The Gospel of John. There's actually certain moments where this, he kind of guidelined it from. And it's in three sections depicting, first of all, it's important that three, because it references the Trinity.
Yeah.
And at the very end, you know, the beginning is very beautiful, building harmonically, and as you remember. The middle section is a bit chaotic and almost violent, and that would be the crucifixion. And he ends it with this beautiful, almost haunting chorale, if you remember, the largo at the end, which is all this beautiful chordal things.
And let's go to the Prokofiev, Romeo and Juliet, suite number two.
Second suite, I think, is one of the most beautiful portions of the suites that Prokofiev put together. You know, this Romeo and Juliet, you know, we just got through Valentine's Day, and Romeo and Juliet has been a big topic in every art form, from literature to film to paintings to sculpting and, of course, music. Tchaikovsky took his hand at it and was very successful. Berlioz did it with great result. Nino Rota, the Italian composer, did it for the film, the Zeffirelli film. And nobody really knows Nino Rota, but he's a great composer, not only for Zeffirelli, but he did all the La Strada and all those things. Beautiful films, Italian films, but also wrote some beautiful concertos and symphony work as well. But I think Prokofiev, how do you feel about this yourself? I think Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet, and especially these parts in this second suite, are the most colorful and most adventurous and most heart-rendering moments of it all.
Well, you look at the first two movements of this suite, you know, it starts out with the Montagues and the Capulets, and the mood it sets is just so, so dark. You just know that no good can come out of this. Those big dissonant chords followed by pianissimo, and then that melody that starts off, kind of that march, that's about as Russian-sounding a piece as I could imagine. And then
exactly right.
And then the contrast to the child Juliet in the next movement.
Exactly right. He captures that young girl's spirit, childlike innocence in a way that's so beautiful. But in that first opening movement in 4-4, he starts it off with, you know, the horns and cymbals, and then he ends the trombones. And by the third measure, this climax of destruction and two opposing chords coming together, clashing by the third measure. And then by the fifth measure, when the chord disappears, you hear the beautiful muted sound of the strings in this pianissimo, three P's, just serenely there. Once the dust clears, there's this beautiful, serene, calm, almost religious sounding chord. Then he does it again and brings it even to a greater height of intensity with that clash of that chord again, and does the same thing with the strings. It's absolutely amazing. He's showing us these two families coming together, and by the third measure of this relationship, we've got a problem. I think Ong is saying at the very ending, the adagio at the very end, he puts us in a really beautiful, beautiful place where it's dolcissimo in sound, it's sweet, it's sung again with muted strings. The muted strings end and fade away to nothing, just like the story and just like the life.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful, beautiful moment.
And that last movement of the second suite, Romeo at Juliet's grave, so yeah.
That's correct. It's a perfect scene.
Okay, the one and only concerto by Sibelius.
Yes. Well, and not only shows that he's a great composer, but it also shows that he must have been quite an amazing violinist to be able to write something so complicated, so beautiful, and so technically challenging. You really have to know the instrument and its limitations. And he really does this in D minor. It's a fabulous work. Starts off with that haunting string passage with almost, it has somewhat of a in pianissimo again with mutes. So this combination of muted strings are in all three of these pieces, which I find it to be interesting.
Huh.
That three different composers from different parts of the world with different ideas and different life experiences have gravitated toward that muted string sound. And I think that's a color, and I'm not sure the audience will actually notice that type of thing. They might see it being put out or taken off, but I'm not sure they're thinking, wow, all three pieces had mutes, you know, that kind of thing. But it's an interesting concept. And then the violin solo enters in the fourth measure, dolce and espressivo, in this beautiful call line that is just gorgeous, that has the same, there's no relationship to the orchestra. He just sets us this tapestry, like this canvas of waves. And the solo violin over the top just lays out this beautiful, beautiful melody. It's very, very beautiful. It becomes more interactive as we go on and get further into the piece. He writes extensive cadenzas for the violinist, and every violinist follows each note to the T. That's how good it is. There's no ad lib of any kind. This is actually what he wanted to be played, and it's very challenging and beautiful. It's a wonderfully exciting first movement.
And plenty of gymnastics for the soloist in that last movement, all the rhythms and staccato double stops and all that you find in there.
This is really challenging to any artist on any level, and I'm very excited that Gary Levinson will be coming in to work with us. Gary is a first-class, world-class violinist. He'll be bringing his Stradivarius with him, and I only mention that because not only is it a beautiful-sounding instrument with a great story in itself, the instrument, but they don't give those to everybody. You have to earn it and be an artist of a certain stature to be given a Stradivarius to play. And he does it justice. It's very, very amazing. You know, he used to be with the New York Philharmonic. I think he was assistant concertmaster, worked with Bernstein and, of course, with Mehta and later. Now he's the senior concertmaster with the Dallas Symphony Orchestra because it allows him to get out and do a lot of weeks as a soloist around the world. So we're very lucky to have him coming out.
This was kind of funny. I saw a quote from British musicologist Donald Tovey, who described the final movement as a polonaise for polar bears.
That's a good one. Write that one down. That's a good one.
Yeah. That would have to be seen to be believed.
But it's a wonderful piece, and it's three movements. It's just a great piece of music. So I'm very excited. The concert will open with the Hanson, then the Prokofiev, and then the second half, I believe, is the concerto with Gary.
What a great show.
It's going to be really exciting.